Is it voice memo that you're using?
Mm-hmm. Okay, this is April 29th.
Hold on, 9th, yeah.
April 29th, 2023. Doug and Mary Thompson from the History Committee doing a second interview with Vince and Christine Mayevsky of Poplar Hill Goat Farm. This is, okay, we had gone to the present, and now I just want to ask, when did the farm get large enough that it was apparent that you needed outside help? And could you talk about first having employees and how you went about doing it, and how it's maybe an ongoing challenge?
So we had we had a young man who was the son of a guy who had been Vincent's real estate partner, and he worked for us. He did pretty much anything and everything working for us. And not so much with the goats, though. He didn't do milking or anything like that, but it was he must have done like barn cleaning and that kind of stuff. Huh? And then Brian stopped, and then when did Scott Kaiser come on board? So we had another guy who was with us for a long time as well, and until we had a most unfortunate. Well, we worked with him for a while, yeah. And he worked with us for a while. He's still here. Well, they both are still here, actually. But Scott Kaiser became kind of a handyman around town for anybody and everybody, including Walter Mondale, who had a home on the St. Croix River here in Scandia, summer home, vacation home. And he, because Walter Mondale, along with Senator Gaylord Nelson from Wisconsin, were those two who were responsible for having the St. Croix River, which runs along the eastern border of Scandia, where we live, designated as a wild and scenic river. And it was only, the first time that rivers had been so designated. So that we have a vacation home in the town of Marine on St. Croix, just south of Scandia, and it is actually in a national park, because this area along the St. Croix River is a national park. And Scott worked for Mondale and knew the family very well. When they weren't there, he took care of the house and did everything that needed to be done for the house. So he used to work for us, but he became kind of a general appreciated handyman throughout the city. And
he put the furnace in here.
Yeah, we still,
Is he still alive? Is he still around?
Oh, yeah, Scott, yeah.
We're still good friends.
He's a young man.
Okay.
Well, he's not a young man anymore.
he was 55. A young man.
He doesn't work on the farm anymore.
Oh, no.
No, he doesn't work on the farm.
Okay.
He's got this independent business, this handyman there.
And
I do everything.
Furnaces and air conditioners and heating.
If you need anything done, you
just call. Was he one of your longest-term employees?
It was a long time, right? Brian was probably the longest.
Yeah. Longest single person.
Single person, yeah. But then after that, when did we start getting milking help? For some reason, I think of Rashke as one of the first ones.
She milked us for 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
And, the way we met Michelle Rashke was a neighbor in Scandia, but she came by with her daughter because her daughter wanted to show a goat in the Washington County Fair. And so Michelle came by with her daughter because she had asked us, can we talk to her about showing goats? And so we let her have a goat to show at the Washington County Fair. And she'd come by and I taught her how to show goats.
Uh-huh.
And what to look for in goats. And Michelle would come and sit there in the lawn chair and watch me teaching her about goats. And when they came by, and Michelle said, do you need some help on the farm? And so anyway, we ended up employing the mother. And she milked goats for us for about 4 years.
Oh, wow. She was wonderful. Yeah, I mean, she was really, really good.
Now, one thing I know that you folks, you use the 12-hour system of 3 a.m. and 3 p.m.
Right.
Has that been an issue to find early morning milkers like
yes.
that?
But
the reason that we had started the 3 p.m. was because we would have a number of high school kids who would come, and they would just get dropped off by the bus
at
3 o'clock
in the afternoon. And so then the 3 a.m. became.
Uh-huh.
So, and the reason we started 3 a.m. was...
Plus I had to work.
Yeah, when we first, even before Poplar Hill, we had a place called Gentle Pines, yeah. And we had just a couple goats, but I worked at the University Hospital in uh-huh. Minneapolis, and Christine taught school in Minneapolis, and I started at 7 o'clock. And yeah. So what we had to do, we had an hour drive into the city, yeah. So yeah. We had to leave the farm at 6 o'clock in the morning. And so typically we'd get up in the morning, and I'd go out to the barn and milk the couple goats we had, and feed the baby goats, and hay them and grain them and water them, and Christine would make some breakfast. We'd eat quick and jump in the car and drive to Minneapolis. And then mm-hmm. I got off work at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. She'd come and pick me up. We'd get back here, and as soon as we got back, I'd run down to the barn to mm-hmm. to milk the goats and mm-hmm. feed the babies, etc. So
it kind of started that way. So started early morning milking.
And then when we came here, yeah, we moved to Poplar Hill, we're sort of still had the same thing. I was involved in real estate sales by this time, and she was teaching, and it worked out well. Plus, as the children grew up, all three of our boys were basketball players. And so this worked out well that we could milk the goats at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and make it to their basketball games at night.
Important.
And that was important.
Yeah, right.
important so those basketball. Were some really good years, actually. We enjoyed
it. Yeah. So that's been obviously much longer than 50 years. If you're staying someplace away from the farm, do you wake up like at 1 in the morning? Or
oh, yeah.
2 in the morning? You don't...
Oh, yeah. I'm almost always wake up before 3 o'clock.
And then you... Do you try to catch up sometimes in the afternoon if you can?
Or a lot.
Do you
just, you know? More so. The older we get, the more catching up to do.
Yeah. What about the days, though, when, I mean, we talked yesterday a little bit about the fact that you grow all your own feed. Mm-hmm. So in the summer, I'm thinking making hay while the sun shines, you're out in the field
a lot.
So you just don't get a lot of sleep, I would think.
That's
at least when you were younger.
One of the reasons I quit real estate is not only we had a few goats, not a lot of goats, but I was. It seemed like every time I'd cut some hay, waiting for the hay to dry, rake it, and then somebody would call me up and said, "You showed me this house a couple days ago, and I'd really like to see it again. We're thinking about buying it." And I'd have to get out of my coveralls and get into my real estate clothes and go show them a house. And
then it would rain, and then it would be...
It'd rain whether they bought the house or not. But hey, got rained on. So yeah. One of the days I said, we just got to quit that.
Yeah. One of the things, too, I know that you've had a lot over the years. I don't know that you're doing it now, but you had a lot of international interns that worked maybe a year or so at a time.
6 months to a year.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about how that went?
Well, it all started when... In 1985, we were asked to go to Dr. Dave Sherman, author of Goat Medicine, the definitive book on goat medicine. Dave and I were asked to go to China to talk with Heifer Project International. Heifer Project, 2 years before, had sent 200 goats from England to China. And they were following it up with an educational mission to accompany Dr. Sherman. Dr. Sherman would talk on vet care, being the author of the book, and I would talk on dairy goat breeding, feeding, management, artificial insemination, type selection, that type of thing. And we went there. And then subsequent to that, Heifer had two people from China that they brought to the United States and to get agricultural experience. And so they spent a year here, I think. And during that year, they spent part of the time on a dairy cow farm, part of the time on a pig farm, and part of the time on a dairy goat farm. And they came separately and at different times. And so we housed them. And then subsequent to that, an organization called Communicating for Agriculture contacted us and said they had somebody who wanted to learn about dairy goats from a country in Europe. And so we agreed, and they came for 6 months and lived with us and not being photographed. they lived with us for 6 months and helped us take care of goats. And after that, they said that had worked out real well, and they had another sort of person. And so actually, we've hosted about 30 different agricultural trainees. But then it got to the point, we don't do that anymore. It got to the point where they weren't...
They weren't coming for farming anymore. They were coming because they just wanted to come to the United States. And they did not have a real interest in farming, and it was not helpful to us. Yeah. And so that was happening. At the same time, all of a sudden, there was the internet and cell phones, and they would be in contact with each other, others over. And so it was more a socializing thing for them, again, just
and
to be in the United States.
And you had to pay for a lot of the...
Well, we paid for it. They gave them room and board and a salary.
Yeah, yeah. So, if it was just a social thing for them,
it was not. So it was no longer working for us, and so we stopped doing it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we just stopped doing it. During that time, we met a lot of wonderful people.
Some of which we still have contacts with, and some have come to the farm. One of our students not long ago brought her husband and two children to the farm.
Where were they from?
She's from Norway, and she had spent 6 months here.
Uh-huh. Yeah, she was wonderful. And they, we had some of them were real characters. Anyway, we're good.
Yeah, I'm sure it was kind of a rich experience for you.
Mm-hmm. If we had more time, we could tell you some interesting stories.
Well,
that's good. We probably don't need that.
So how about today now? Who is your work pool now? I mean, I know your family's still quite involved, right?
Yeah, Sarah.
Yeah, probably Sarah and Shane really stepped up and to the farm work in the last few years. And it was Sarah focusing on the animals a lot, and Shane focusing on the field work and the growing of the crops and so on. And so, and they kind of took over everything that way. Mm-hmm.
And Stephen,
our youngest son, Stephen, he worked too, although he was kind of supplemental to what they were doing.
He basically, Stephen takes the milk run now and plus helps us on the farm, I mean, but... the milk run's a big job to
for his job. That's right.
The pasteurization
once a
week,
plant.
Mm-hmm.
Count on that.
Sarah's husband does.
And now, in the last couple of years, Sarah's husband has stepped up, and he has been, because she was, kind of started drowning in all of the work that needed to be done, and so he stepped up to help her. Mm-hmm. And then we have probably about 9 employees at any given time.
Okay.
Part-time employees. Mm-hmm. That help with milking and also with field work some. And then Steve and Sarah, of course. So,
well, and then of the last few years, I think it's interesting that Dan Considine has come
right
into the picture as far as...
Who's he?
Well, we got a separate recording of Dan, so people can listen to Dan. But he's... Doesn't he do a lot of field work, too?
Yes.
He does help with the field work, yes. He doesn't... milking is not something he does.
He doesn't do milking anymore.
He just doesn't do that.
Uh-huh.
But he does help with the field work.
And he does maintain his own goats.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. When he moved to from Wisconsin to Minnesota, we made an agreement that he could keep a certain number of his goats here, and he milks them, and I mean we milk them, and have arrangements for we get the milk, and he gets the kids.
We get half the kids.
Yeah, half the kids, and but we do all, and we feed his goats and pay for the vet care and pay for them to be on DHI test, and these are things he really, really is concerned about.
Yeah, so. So that's kind of good. He's, the Sunshine Herd is still alive and,
and well. Yeah, and it was good because he was at a point that he needed support.
Yeah, and he's at the farm on and off all the time, checking his goats, going to the barn.
Right. He's still, I think, involved with exports somewhat.
Oh, yeah, right? He's trucking, does a lot of trucking, of hauling of animals, and is very active with the American Dairy Goat Association.
Right. So are you...
I wondered, does he do help you with breeding or
selection of flowers? And I've sort of stepped back in that. I mean, basically, Sarah does that. She talks to me.
And she talks to Dan.
And one of the agreements is that we can share bucks. And our bucks, he can use our bucks and we can use his bucks. And
who does the actual breeding? Is it... under maybe Sarah's direction, but is she the one that does the hand breeding, or do you pen breed does? Well, I mean, with so many
some
goats.
Goats are pen bred. Some goats are all the milkers have to be. We walk the buck in the morning after milking and in the afternoon and write down the tag. All the goats are tagged. So not only are they tattooed, but they've got tags for quick identification and the tags. Correspond to the ear tag, I mean the ear tattoo, so we can have one of the workers walk the buck, and they take a little pad out there and write down the number of goats in heat, and then we'll catch them, put them in a pen, and then somebody will take them out to the buck.
Who run. Does that, like the workers or Sarah?
Some of the more reliable
workers.
Yeah,
that's what I was getting at.
Sometimes Sarah, sometimes Steve, and sometimes Shane, and sometimes
with the workers, there's a scale of responsibility.
Right.
The more experienced workers, and the ones you can trust to breed goats.
Yeah,
and,
And then it's all written down.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We've got
book there.
I wrote the book. A chapter in Langston University's book, Dairy Goat Management. I have the chapter on record keeping.
Oh, you want to talk about that just a little bit?
No.
An overview?
Okay. Buy the book.
You've gone down to Langston. Tell about the times you've been down to Langston.
Oh, I've been down to Langston.
What was they first invited you down for?
I don't know. Maybe, the first time I think it was to talk about the new barn. Maybe we built the new dairy barn in 1991.
Okay.
We named the barn. There's a granite plaque in the sidewalk up to it says Domus Cuprorum, the house of goats.
Uh-huh.
And in Latin it's
in Latin.
Yeah, that's in Latin.
It's in
so
Latin.
What does this have to do with Langston?
And the year it was built, 1991. Some people think that's a gravestone.
Right.
But it's
what does this have to do with Langston, though?
I don't what.
You said the first time you went down there, you think
they asked me to come and explain the barn and what we do, our operation, talk about our farm, and talk about the barn. And so I showed slides of the milking parlor and the office and the milk house where we have two bulk tanks and all the equipment there. Mm-hmm.
And then they asked him to write a chapter for the book on record keeping.
Well,
it wasn't a book even. I don't think it was a course that they were developing, wasn't it?
But it's a book.
It became a book, but it was a kind of a course on record keeping.
Hmm.
And so he did do that with his characteristic writing style, tongue-in-cheek part of it, and it was, we never heard back from anybody about this until, when was it, just recently, somebody posted something on a Facebook page or a Dairy Goat-related page, and they said, you need to read the book or the chapter on record-keeping in this Langston series because it's the best description of the kind of record keeping you should be doing that I've seen.
Huh.
Quick.
We need to find that.
Somebody read it.
Yeah. Oh, that's really interesting. Yeah.
And then I think I went down to Langston once too. And then where was the other place you went besides Langston?
Prairie View, Texas. I spoke there. And then I've spoken in Mexico and Canada and a lot of places, several places.
Associations
different locations in the United States.
Huh.
And we've exported a lot. We've sold goats.
Oh yeah,
All over. All the goats are registered with the American Dairy Goat Association. Matter of fact, we learned that we have more goats that are in the United States that are registered under the Poplar Hill herd name than any other herd name in the country.
That's really.
And
we talked about this yesterday.
Yeah. Oh, did we talk about that?
Yeah, we got that. Yeah.
And what was? But what were you starting to say?
And we've sold goats all over the United States, and we've exported goats to 14 different countries.
And who do you go through different groups to do that?
Sometimes exporters have contacted us. Sometimes people have contacted us. We've actually sent the goat. Mm-hmm. You know, I've taken goats to the airport and put them on a plane, and they've gone out to...
I went once with them to Chicago. They were going to go out of Chicago, and we had to bring them to the quarantine station the night before, and the goats were in this, stayed there for a few, I don't even think it was 24 hours.
And have vet examinations.
And they had vet examinations, and then we had to drive them to the airport, and my remembrance of that is driving out onto the runway at...
Chicago.
No, right next to us.
Up to 747.
Yes, and then we went into the plane, and it was fascinating. It was just this humongous plane that was totally empty. Totally empty. Except for the very front that you'd climb up the steps, and that's where the pilot was. That was the cockpit up there.
Well,
it was
when the goats were just loose, or
they
were
in there. The goats are in a double, they construct a double deck crate, and there were 48, so there were like
24 and 24.
About that. And
were they dry? Were they all dry, or were they milkers?
Yeah, these were not milkers. No. These were all.
I would think mostly they take dry. I mean, because it'd be hard to export milkers.
And these crates are something the airline has.
No, the freight forwarder has a contact that makes the crate that the animals go into.
Okay.
And then they load it. You have to have them there, you know, quite ahead of time in the, because they got to load them on there, and they put the crate in and roll it down in tracks and lash it down so it can't wallow around in the plane. And
I was going to ask. I remember again that I know you've had a long relationship with the University of Minnesota. I was thinking of that about you probably had to have these goats, you know, getting to export. You need health papers and reliable vets to get it just right, so they're accepted. But also, I remember that you have this long relationship where veterinary students train on your farm.
Yeah.
Yes,
you mentioned.
And over the years, I've been for 9 years. I was on the advisory council to the University of Minnesota Vet Hospital,
but we work with veterinary college, and they come out and they bring their students out, and they do things that are helpful to us, but then are also helpful to having the students trained in what things to do.
Like, do they give immunizations or do check over the goats?
They check them. Everything. They do.
Do they do disbudding for you or
no?
Well, we teach them how to do that. We teach the students.
And then they do pregnancy checking. They do pretty much anything and everything.
And then for 9 years, I was on the University of Minnesota Diagnostic Lab on their council too.
So our relation, and then we have worked with other smaller colleges who had veterinary technician programs, and they would bring them out to be trained and to work with the animals. And there were like two or three of them that we worked with. And one that they all disbanded. Why did they fall apart?
Part of the thing, through economic things.
They were charging too much money for
those were private colleges.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And so then there's still one that we work with.
From Wisconsin that comes out and brings students out.
And she brings students over. And they just, she does her own training with them. We don't even need to do that.
She's been here so often.
You
instructor.
Her.
Yeah.
Have you taught them? I mean, I always think, one of the most stressful times of the year is kidding, and with difficult kid presentations. Mm-hmm. Have any of them gotten in on births where they've learned what's normal?
Our daughter Sarah has made some arrangements with the university vet school that they, some of them that are in the small ruminant, they want to be small ruminant specialists. Most of the people at the university vets want to do dogs and cats, yeah, right, that type
right,
of thing.
Right.
That's the most lucrative thing.
Sure.
But large animal, it's harder to get students. But they have where they come out, sometimes they'll come out for a week or even 2 weeks, and they
Do they stay there?
No, they don't stay.
They just spend
an hour drive from the city, so they'll come out in the morning, and then they spend the day here, usually during kidding season, so they can be present for birthings. And Sarah, or I used to, but Sarah takes over now, and animals that have dystocia, you know, difficult kiddings, she'll show them how to clean up and go in and align kids if need be. Make sure, like, animals that need help, if they're breech or something like that, and we try to, once we feel that they're competent, we try to give them the hands-on experience that they can go into the goat and they can do it. So when they leave here after their week or two, they've learned as much as they can.
Well, and I just remember a conversation we had several years ago, but I think, too, when you sometimes talk to people that haven't had dairy goats for a long time, and they talk about C-sections, and they have C-sections every year. And I remember asking you you'd had very, very few, as have we. I think we've had one maybe. And yet we it's not like we have a lot of DOA kids. That, I mean, I think that learning to really help with dystocia and how to help the
kids, right.
It's such an art and a skill that especially new vets, that they would really benefit from.
Right. They think that C-sections are the easy way to go, and it's really not.
Exactly.
Often fatal.
Yeah.
Pardon?
Often fatal.
By our experience, we had one that was a Sonnen that was very big, and we could tell it had multiple, and she was so weak that we weren't going to be able to get into her, do her, and so the vets were out that day, and so they did it. They cleaned her up, and they did a C-section, and took out the babies that were already dead.
Yeah.
And sewed her back up, and 2 days later, the doe died.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's just
that's not a
common story.
You get in there and you make sure that they're presenting as much as you can, that they're presenting the right way, and
help as needed.
Yeah.
I'm not jumping ahead, but I know now your family and the farm, you've gotten in to the agritourism a bit. Can you kind of tell how that's what you're doing
well,
with that?
We used to give tours for free to people. Right. You know, people would call. Well, it was not as popular, but somebody would call and want to see the farm, and we'd be happy to show them around. But it got to the point where we were showing so many people around that we were having to hire people to do our work in the farm so we could show somebody. So we started charging.
Mm-hmm.
And then subsequent to this, my daughter has set up sort of a tourist thing, and she gives everything from, if somebody wants a consulting tour, because we've had people come to our farm that want to start a dairy.
Mm-hmm.
And so if they want a consulting tour with me, it's a more expensive tour, and she usually has a fee for 2 hours and then so much an hour after that. And good thing she did that, because we had a group from South America come up here, and they ended up spending the whole, they got here like 8 o'clock in the morning and didn't leave till 7 o'clock at night.
Wow.
and they were, these were sharp guys. These were agricultural people, and they had all the right questions.
Yeah,
they knew what they were doing.
Yeah.
They knew what they
wanted.
They
got their
to
money's
ask.
Worth then.
Yeah, yeah, and they were happy to pay for it.
Yeah.
And then she has small family tours and then school tours, and then she used to, we used to break it out. They could have just a tour that was sort of bare bones, and then if they would have milk, sampling of milk and cheese that we had then, and then I milking a goat, and so then all of that now kind of gets wrapped into one kind of tour, right? That,
yeah, and you have the little ribbons you give the people, right?
Right? I milked a goat at Poplar Hill Dairy Goat Farm, right?
Which is a big,
kids that big milk
thing.
You want to tell your story about the ribbons?
Yeah, you want to tell that, yeah.
This is a cute story.
Didn't he tell us yesterday?
Well, but not on
here. Oh, okay.
The cute story about that the ribbon, it's just a little... And so get a phone call one day. I'm at the farm. I get a phone call, and this woman said, "My daughter was a young girl in grade school. They came out to the farm 2 years ago, and to see the goats. And she milked a goat, and she got a ribbon that said, 'I milked a dairy goat at Poplar Hill. I milked a goat at Poplar Hill Dairy Goat Farm.' And we make our daughter." Every night before she goes to bed, we require her to read some, and so she reads out of a book, and she uses that ribbon as a bookmark. And when she's done reading for the night, she puts it in there, and she said 2 days ago she couldn't find her bookmark, and she has cried herself to sleep for the last two nights. Is there any way you could send us another bookmark? So I got her address and put it in the mail that day. And so it's amazing how such a small thing can be so important to somebody.
Right. And those that little taste, I think of agricultural life is so important to folks that really have no experience. I don't think we hardly can realize what it might mean in their long term life. Well,
so one of the things
go ahead.
Talking about the people who don't have knowledge about farms and so on and give it to them. I taught in Minneapolis and started, I think, the second or third year that I was teaching there to bring my students out to the farm, and they would come out for overnights. So they would...
And what grade would that have been?
This has been fifth and sixth grade. They would come out and they'd sleep in the barn. And they would help with chores. So they had to draw straws to who got to help with morning chores and who got to help with afternoon chores. But they did. And many years later, a couple of students who became teachers, and one of them said to me, "You know, I'll never forget, I drew that straw for the morning milking." He said, "I can still remember what it felt like to get up early in the morning to milk." But these kids didn't... I mean, some of them were at the stage where you don't get your eggs from a grocery store. They just did not understand farming at all. So this was a very valuable experience for them, and that I still hear about when I see them or connect with them on Facebook.
Got a couple stories about that. Before we moved to Poplar Hill, we lived in Wyoming, Minnesota, and that's where we had just a couple goats and. And we had a couple pigs and chickens, and she brought one of her classes out, and it looked like it was going to rain, and so there was a large garage there, and so ordinarily they just put their sleeping bags out in the yard and camp out there for the night because it was an overnighter, since it looked like rain, I decided to clear everything out of the garage and put it in a big pile in the front yard, the yard there, and covered it with a tarp and to keep the rain off, and then the kids could spread their sleeping bags in the garage. And so we had this pile of stuff from the garage in the yard. And now these are inner city kids from Minneapolis. Yeah. One little boy walks up to me and says, "Are you just going to leave that out there?" And I said, "Yeah." And he says, "Will it still be there in the morning?" In other words, are people going to come here and take all our stuff? Yeah. And pile in the front yard.
In the middle of 80 acres of woods.
The middle of 80 acres. And then a little kid come, you know, we have our goats, and we had a couple pigs and chickens and a couple of geese, and I had some bees in this big garden. This one child walked up to me and said, "Mr. Majewski, have you ever had the state fair out here?"
Are anything else? I mean, I know we could do this for hours because there's lots of stories, but Anything else that you think of right now that you want to get on posterity?
For posterity.
Just remember this: if you're a person thinking about goats, just remember we started with one goat. Be careful. At times we've had 1,000 goats. Goats are addictive, so be careful.
Vincent would describe our farm often as a hobby that got out of hand.
Yeah,
that's what he'd say.
Yeah.
But the state fair and shows, that sort of thing, Washington County Fair. I know you've been very involved in all of that. How many years at the state fair now?
Almost.
How many?
I think this will be 43.
Wow.
And I guess that's worth saying on here is that we and you and the Larson family are the only three families that have shown every year since 1980 when the dairy goats got into the fair. And then, of course, 2020 didn't count because of COVID.
We didn't have it.
We're all working towards 50 years because then we get special recognition and a plaque from the state fair. Yeah, 50 years.
50 years. Yeah. Oh, yeah, sure.
You think we'll make it?
I don't know. It gets to be a longer drive every.
We can read posthumously.
Yeah, well, if our kids keep it up, another 7 years.
And they will, I think. I know Sarah enjoys it a lot.
And
I imagine that they will, who knows?
I mean, you could even just bring one goat, and it would count. They could put the plaque.
We should do that this year.
Put the plaque on our grave or something. They made it for those 50 years. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, guys. It's been great. Being able to record a little bit of.
Well, thank you for taking the time to do this, and I just can't wait to hear all the other stories.
Yeah, well, you'll be going to what is it? What's the
website?
ADGA History. What's it called, Doug? The site where they can find this.
The website is www.adgahistory.com.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Check it out.
But you can also get there.